From the Carol App for Mums, this is the Mum Debrief podcast with your host, Holly Zocalan, mum of two and the founder of the Carol App, the free mobile app connecting and supporting mums throughout their motherhood journey through community and handpicked expert-led content. The Mum Debrief is a podcast where we talk all things motherhood from the good, the bad, and the tantrums. Join us as we welcome expert guests to talk all things pregnancy to postpartum and beyond, and discuss our own experiences to help make your motherhood journey a little bit easier. We are so happy to have you here. Let's get into it. This episode is brought to you by Beauty Pie, the beauty brand aiming to provide consumers with high-end, hard-working products without the hefty price tag. Beauty Pie is an absolute go-to for affordable luxury skin products that work. Some of my favourite products include the Japan Fusion Cleanser and the Healthy Skin Moisturiser. Both are an absolute staple in my skincare routine and help to keep my skin looking youthful, glowy and hydrated. The Carol App community has an exclusive discount of 3 months free membership, where you get 70% off full price luxury skincare and beauty products. And trust me when I say their products are incredible. Go to www.beautypie.com/bp/promotions/the-carol-app to get your exclusive discount today. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Mum Debrief. This week I spoke with Megan Rossiter, who is the founder of an organisation called Birth Ed. And through Birth Ed, Megan supports parents through their birth and early parenting preparation, helping them to advocate for themselves through their pregnancy and their birth. This conversation was so, so insightful. I loved chatting with Megan. She's got so many pearls of wisdom. We talk about navigating the current maternity system, advocating for yourself through your pregnancy and your birth, and so much more. Enjoy! Welcome to the Mum Debrief, Megan. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, I've been so excited to chat with you. So before we get started, it'd be really good if you could please tell our listeners a little bit about you and what you specialise in for parents to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Megan Rossiter. I am the founder of an organisation called Birth Ed, where we support families in their kind of birth and early parenting preparation, really putting them back at the centre of their experiences and ideally giving them the kind of confidence and self-trust to do things the way that they want to do them, challenging what we are told by society and advertising and the maternity system, and really, really helping them to kind of tune back into their own needs and desires as a mum or as a, you know, parent to be.
Amazing. And what inspired you to go down this route? Were you a midwife before, or was it your own experience that kind of guided you towards becoming, you know, creating the Birth Ed?
So I was training to be a midwife 10 years ago now, before my eldest son was born. And I fell pregnant with him when I was in my second year of training. I had him and went back to my third year of training and ended up stopping just shortly before qualifying because childcare funding and fun things like that. So actually setting up Birth Ed was a sort of an interim move. It was something that I was going to be doing kind of in the short term before I had planned to go back to training. And in that period of time, I sort of had the realization that the way that I was able to work, the way that I was able to practice, the support that I was able to offer meant that I was reaching many, many more families than I ever had done kind of working clinically. And that I was able to practice in a way that wasn't bound by such tight guidelines, such, you know, influenced by system pressures, influenced by finances, politics, all of the stuff that you face when you're kind of working within the maternity system. So I ended up not going back, and this ended up sort of becoming my full-time career over the past 7 years now since we founded. So it sort of came about by accident, but it's, yeah, the very best place for me to be, for sure.
Absolutely. And your work is so, so important. Antenatal education and hypnobirthing were huge for me. And it's something that we talk about with our community on a weekly basis. You know, when you find out you're pregnant, it's so overwhelming anyway. Going through the maternity system, not knowing where to start, what steps are next, and especially around birth prep, it's so overwhelming. What do you think mums to be should be looking for when thinking about preparing for birth?
I think getting educated is key. Unfortunately, in the kind of current maternity system as it exists, there just is not the provision that exists in the NHS, if we're talking kind of in the UK, to adequately prepare families for, number one, what giving birth actually involves, what it's going to take from you. And number two, to really understand all of your kind of options and choices. So it unfortunately, and I don't believe that this should be the case. I believe that it should be freely available and provided by the NHS for everybody, but the fact is that it's not. And so you do have to go and kind of seek out your own independent sources of information, which in itself can then be another minefield, because the internet is absolutely full of information. Some of it is reliable, some of it is an absolute pile of nonsense. So I think it's really about finding an organization or a person that you really connect with, that you really trust, that really kind of aligns with whatever is important to you for preparing for your birth. And the way that I teach at Birth Ed and the kind of support that we offer is going to be suitable for quite a lot of people, but certainly not for everybody. And so it's about, yeah, taking what you want from things and then trying to leave the bits that don't feel relevant to you. And when you find something that feels like the right fit, I think you tend to know quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you support mums through this process with Birth Ed? Can anyone do hypnobirthing? Should, you know, mums to be attend classes with their birth partners or people that you plan on birthing with? How do you support mums throughout this?
So the Birth Ed method that I teach now, the approach that we have is sort of fourfold. And some of this aligns with kind of hypnobirthing preparation, and some of it is very much my own development and technique from having supported thousands of families on this journey. But it's sort of four things that you need to be preparing through. So first of all is the kind of mindset. So it's understanding what is going on in your kind of the subconscious part of your mind before you've fallen pregnant, during pregnancy, because our subconscious understanding of birth, of babies, of parenting, everything will have been influenced. Will that area of our brain will have been influenced for the whole of our lives. The way that we were born, the way that we were parented, the way that we were fed, all of the kind of media, social media, newspaper reports, TV, films, everything that you've ever seen about babies or about giving birth will sit in that subconscious part of your brain. And the reason that that is relevant is because your subconscious goes on to inform all of the conscious decisions that we make. So the things that we think we're making decisions about, like where to have your baby or how to give birth or whatever it is you're deciding, how to feed your baby, it will also influence all of the involuntary decisions that we do. So when we walk in a room, you know, if I'm supporting somebody in labor and they come in, say, to the labor ward, even if they weren't in labor, 99 times out of 100, they'll get straight on the bed, because the subconscious programming in our brain, we go, oh, look, a bed. I'm the person that's pregnant, so I get in the bed. And we don't question it. It becomes a really automatic response. So the reason that we want to prepare our kind of mindset and challenge our mindset ahead of giving birth is to ensure that the information that is sitting there is like factual and reassuring and helpful to us, and isn't actually being kind of detrimental in some way or biased by something that actually is not based on truth or biology or whatever it is. The other reason that mindset is important, and anybody that's listening that has given birth before will know, giving birth, I always say 70% in your mind and 30% in your body. Like, yes, you're feeling what's happening, but how you're talking to yourself in your head, your ability to kind of cope, your ability to manage is so influenced by what sits in that subconscious part of our brain. You know, we could be completely panicking, we could feel safe. All of that sits in our mind. So preparing our minds is really important. The second thing that you want to be preparing, or at least understanding, is your body. So understanding, what are the normal physiological processes that happen inside somebody's body? And when you kind of get into the depths of something like the Birth Ed method, you begin to see the very, very close links between what happens in your mind and what happens in your body. And actually, it's absolutely pointless understanding one without understanding the other, because the hormones that go through our body, the way that our muscles are working, the way that the uterus responds to hormones, all of this is controlled by our brains. And so the two things are very, very kind of closely linked. So we need to understand, what does our body need in order for it to work? What is it likely to feel like? What are the decisions that we're making, and how are they going to impact our bodies? So where you give birth, the positions that you're in, those kinds of things will impact the physical unfolding of labor and birth. And within your body, that learning about your body also means you can begin to understand that sometimes things don't go the way that nature has kind of completely intended them to, and when can intervention be helpful, and what kinds of things can we reach for to kind of change what the body's doing or support what the body's doing. So that's the second thing. The third thing is understanding your choices. So again, similarly to everything we've talked about, you need to know what your pain relief options are, what interventions you might be offered, what assessments and, you know, measures of health and things you might be offered. What are the pros of those things? What are the cons of those things? And there's nowhere, you know, if you were giving birth on a desert island with no maternity system at all, you could learn about the mind and body, or you kind of would already probably have a knowledge of that through kind of passed down wisdom. And everything else is essentially irrelevant. But because most of us are giving birth in a very, very massive maternity system, we need to understand what it is we're making decisions about and the potential impacts of those decisions. And the final thing, and this is something that is really, really important to the work that I do at Birth Ed, is communication. So it is completely useless knowing what you want if you don't have any confidence or contact or anything to then say it. So saying, I want to plan a cesarean birth, but not feeling like you know who to ask or that you feel confident enough to ask for it, it's useless knowing it. Saying that you want a home birth, but you've been told you've got gestational diabetes and you're not allowed, if you don't have the kind of confidence or the advocacy skills to be able to ask that, then again, it's completely useless, which is why those four things together are, in my opinion, the kind of essential things you need in terms of preparing for giving birth.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. You know, we're so conditioned that birth is so painful or awful, you know, the worst day of your life. And then you have this baby to take care of. And I know it's not about everything going to plan, but it's about feeling empowered in your choices and advocating for yourself, for your baby, which is for the whole life. And it really starts in pregnancy and birth as well. So can you talk about the importance of awareness going into your birth? And why it's so important to know what's going on physiologically for women who are going to give birth.
I think the main, you know, if we had a perfect maternity system, then ultimately you wouldn't need to know anything. Because if the maternity system was set up in a way that supported birth physiology, then we don't need to know what's happening inside of our bodies for it to happen. Most of us don't really know what the transfer of gas is that happens in our lungs, but we breathe every day quite happily. But we are breathing generally, you know, unless you maybe live in central London, in a world that is providing us with everything that we need to breathe effectively. Now, when we enter the kind of modern maternity system, and this will be, I suppose, quite challenging for some people to hear, but the maternity system is not set up at all to support the physiology of birth. When you understand what the absolute basic needs are of birth physiology, so there's four things that you have to feel for birth to work well the majority of the time. You need to feel safe, you need to feel relaxed, you need to feel unobserved, and you need to feel undisturbed. And all of those things you need to feel kind of simultaneously. So safe, relaxed, unobserved, and undisturbed. When you think about what standard maternity care looks like for most people, there is no way that those four needs are being met. I mean, even at all in labor, but certainly for the majority of labor. Most people are meeting somebody that they've never met before for the very, very first time whilst they're in a really vulnerable position of being in labor. Most people are giving birth on a brightly lit hospital room. Again, it's not making us feel undisturbed, it's not making us feel relaxed. Most people are facing conversations about all of these risks of their pregnancy, and we're feeling really afraid. We're not necessarily feeling kind of safe in that care. Yeah. And so when those needs aren't met, we do not support physiology. And then it is, you can argue, it's then, is it then any wonder why for the vast majority of, and it is the vast majority of people, birth doesn't work. And I'm putting work in inverted commas, because it's something close to 80% of births have some kind of intervention in them. If 80% of humans required intervention in order to safely birth their babies, the human race just wouldn't exist. It cannot be. And what we know from what the World Health Organization state is that somewhere between 10 and 15% of women babies will hugely benefit from intervention in the birth. So a cesarean birth, an induction of labor, potentially an instrumental birth, that those things in, let's be very generous and say one in six maybe people may really benefit. It may be life-saving interventions, but at the moment we're at one in five getting a birth that doesn't have that in. So somewhere there is like a huge proportion of families and women that are being let down by this maternity system. And what we are finding is that year on year on year on year, the rate of intervention is going up and up and up and up and up. And at, like, last year, so where we're recording this, 2024, so the year that was, I can't remember the last year it was published, it might have been 21-22, and then it was published in 23, I think. The less than half of women go into spontaneous labour now. So less than half of women actually start labour on their own. And again, it just cannot be. You know, basic maths will tell us that if less than half of people can do it, then eventually we will end up with no people. And that just isn't what is happening. So I've now completely forgotten what your question was. Oh, the maternity system not being the best support of physiological birth. Yeah, so the reason why we need to understand those basic things that the human body needs is because then it puts us in a position of power where we can go, okay, if having a physiological birth is important to me, which it won't be for everybody, and that also is totally valid, but if that is important to you, then quite frequently it does require stepping slightly out of what we've referred to in the maternity system as the conveyor belt of care. So you go to your booking appointment, you tick four boxes, here you go, this is the birth you're going to get. Actually, you're not a population-based statistic. You're an individual person with your own priorities, your own background, your own physical circumstances, clinical circumstances, everything. And so it's about how do you get care that treats you as an individual rather than just tick box, basically. Mm-hmm. And when we understand what we actually need in order to give birth, then it can influence everything from your choices around where to have your baby, the choices around really routine parts of labor care like vaginal examinations or a stretch and sweep in late pregnancy. It can influence whether or not you're accepting interventions like an induction of labor and under what circumstances that feels appropriate for you and what circumstances it doesn't. And when we don't understand that, which frankly most of the maternity system often doesn't understand, then we are often left, frequently women are left blaming their bodies or themselves for something going wrong or needing assistance in their births, when in actual fact, it was just that a very, very basic need hadn't been met by the system that was supposed to be providing it for them.
Yeah, and it's so sad that we as women feel that it was our fault, in inverted, you know, it's like, it's so true that it's often the women that have been let down by the maternity system.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just have never had the answers. They've just never had the like nuanced in-depth conversations about what happened and why it happened. Like, I will meet women who have had their first baby like 4 years ago, and it was a really, really long labor, and it ended in an unplanned cesarean birth, and it wasn't what they wanted. And they have lived for 4 years. And, you know, I even speak to people like my mum's age who go, oh, yes, you know, I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. My body didn't do this. My body didn't do that. And when you actually unpick it, and you hear what they're saying, and they'll be like, okay, so it's in labor. It took a really, really long time to get established. I was having severe back pain. The contractions were like back to back. There wasn't a break. I was so tired. They broke my waters. And then I wasn't dilating, so I had a cesarean. And you go, hang on, so if we go all the way back, what you're telling me at the beginning there is that you had back pain, your contractions were back to back, there were no gaps. To me, that sounds like a baby that's in a difficult position. Okay. So if we break the waters of a baby that's in a difficult position, we're pushing them further into the pelvis in a difficult position. So then the cervix doesn't dilate. And let's say it's all started with an induction of labor or something. And you can almost always track it right back and you go, there was a sign here, or there was something that happened way earlier in labor that actually explains everything that then unfolded. Mm-hmm. And this is another thing in the maternity system we call the cascade of interventions. So the once we interfere once, the chances of then genuinely needing further intervention goes up and up and up and up. So if we, I don't know, have an induction of labor, the chances of that being quite painful or quite intense go up. Then the chances of us reaching for an epidural then go up. Then the chances of labor stopping, stalling, slowing down go up. So then we turn up the hormone drip, it goes up. And then either baby doesn't cope very well with it or the cervix isn't dilating. And then the chances of an instrumental birth or a cesarean birth go up. And it's not at that final point, oh, I did so well and then my body failed me at the end. It's actually, no. It was the induction that didn't work. It wasn't your body that didn't work. Yeah. Or it was the impact of a hospital room that wasn't helping rather than your body that wasn't helping. So it's that takes, and it takes so much unpicking, and there isn't the time for midwives in the maternity system, or often the knowledge. If somebody has trained in a very medicalized environment, they have worked only in a very medicalized environment, and you're only seeing the people in labor, you're not seeing them postnatally, you're not seeing them during pregnancy, you're not getting that overarching picture, it's really easy to just view everything as a really kind of isolated event rather than actually so much that leads to that point and comes away from that point. We have a real urge in maternity care to separate pregnancy, birth, and the postnatal period or the infant feeding or whatever. But they're not separate events. There's like one thread that goes the whole way through what we do in pregnancy, the way that we experience pregnancy, the interventions or tests that we have in pregnancy impact the way that we experience birth. The way that we experience birth, it impacts the way that we are healing, the way that our babies are fed. They're not these kind of isolated events as the maternity system might often make them seem. But there's, yeah, this thread that goes the whole way through, and we need to start thinking about birth and birth preparation and parenting as an entire experience rather than these really kind of separate things.
Absolutely. And that ties so well with what you were saying about the importance of understanding what your body goes through when you're in labor, pregnancy, and really understanding the physiological changes and the process, because then you can advocate for yourself, feeling the sensations, knowing what's going on, and having a clear understanding of, well, it could be this, it could be that, rather than having a, you know, traumatic birth and then having to look back and feeling like you'd failed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it, sadly, that is the experience of a lot of women who have had a birth and never got really, they've still there a few years on with lots of unanswered questions mm-hmm. about what happened.
And so how would you suggest that women advocate for themselves through their maternity care and into birth? What steps would you say that mums-to-be should be taking?
So I think the first thing, just to be really, really clear about, is that absolutely every single thing that happens in pregnancy and birth is a choice that you get to decide whether it's something you want to accept or not. And it's very infrequent that things are presented as a choice, especially during pregnancy. So you get like your 12-week scan letter through the post, and we all get very excited. We're like, oh my God, we're going to see the baby. It's all very exciting. It's never written as, we would like to invite you to this scan. We were wondering whether or not you wanted to come. It's like, here's your scan date and come. And because the majority of people, even if it was presented as a choice, would probably still accept, we don't really question it. We just turn up and we have the scan. Yeah. But if you, even at that early stage of pregnancy, can just start to almost like reframe everything in your mind as a decision, then it kind of puts you into practice for decision making. So a decision that sometimes people might be making at that point is whether or not they want to undergo some of the screening tests that happen at that 12-week scan. And some people decide that they don't, and some people decide that they do. And so actually really starting to approach things as early as you can as decisions. So even things like weighing in a pot, having a blood test, all of these things, you can, if you want to, you can say, no, thanks, I don't want to do that. And it doesn't mean I'm saying you should say no thanks, but I just mean that if you start practicing it, then when it comes to making decisions that feel a little bit bigger, then those decisions can be really easy or much easier to make because your mind is already in the place of like, okay, this is a decision. We get to decide. Do we decide yes? Do we decide no? Do we decide maybe later? So that's the kind of first thing that I would recommend is just starting to approach everything as a decision. The next thing that I would really recommend is when you're making those decisions, you really want like a full picture of what that potentially means for your birth or, you know, for your parenting, for your pregnancy. So for example, there's a really helpful tool that you can use, you've probably heard of it, called using your brain. So you want to use, you want to know what the benefits are of doing this thing and what the benefits are of not doing it. And you want to know what the risks are of doing it and the risks are of not doing it. The A stands for alternatives. That's like, if I didn't do this, what else could I do? I stands for instinct. Like, what does it literally, what does it feel like I should do? And the N stands for nothing. So if we didn't do this now, then what could we do it another day? What would happen if we didn't do this now? And so that's just a really useful tool to kind of reach for. And again, you can practice it on some decisions that feel blatantly obvious or easy for you. But it's things like, so let's take, for example, having a scan at 20 weeks of pregnancy. We tend to just turn up for the scan. We don't tend to really think about what the potential outcomes of this scan might be. And you might be recommended to have growth scans. Something might come up in this scan, say, okay, we'll book you in for growth scans, four growth scans now before your baby's born. And again, frequently we just go, oh, okay. And we don't ever question it. And so approaching that with like, well, why should we have them? What good is that going to do? Mm-hmm. And what benefit would not having them have? And if we have them, what are the potential outcomes? Because, you know, they might find things in these scans that are then impacting your birth choices, and they might be very helpful things to find out, or they might not really be particularly helpful or evidence-based at all. And so working through a tool like that, even in pregnancy, can be very, very helpful. I would say most of the decisions that the big decisions that we have to make are happening in pregnancy rather than in labor, but they do happen in labor as well. And my other kind of top tips for decision making, number one is writing things down. So writing down, if you are going to an appointment where you're going to have to make a decision, writing down the questions that you have got that you want answered. You know, this is, I do this for a living, and still I will sit in front of a doctor, and if they say something, I'm like, oh, okay, and then I'll leave and I won't ask anything I want to ask, because there's that white coat syndrome. We sit in front of somebody who seems to us as to be important, and suddenly we turn into like this quiet little mouse that doesn't feel like bolshy enough to ask our questions. Whereas if they are written down on a bit of paper, it is so much easier to just be like, and when they say, have you got any questions? You can go, yes, I actually wrote four down on a bit of paper before I got here, and these are the things that I want to ask. And also down on that paper, you can write down if there's something really important that you want to communicate. Again, reading it off a bit of paper just takes far less courage than remembering to say it out loud. And you can also ask for your care provider, whether that's your midwife or your doctor, if they are recommending something or they're saying something, then you can ask for them to write it down. That is, number one, just quite a sneaky way of making sure that they genuinely stand by what it is they're saying, because as soon as it's documented in notes, it is real and it's written down rather than if it was kind of said in passing. And you tend to often get slightly harder statistics or facts or more nuance when it's written down. But also it means that then you can take it, you can go away, you can do your own research before making a decision. And that is my final tip. And this goes for labor as well, is wherever possible, do not make your decision in front of the person that is asking you to make it. Because invariably we end up just nodding along, and then we get out the other side and we're like, I can't believe I just like nodded at that. So if it's in pregnancy, go home, sleep on it if you can. If it's in labor, then say, would you mind just stepping outside of the room for a minute so that we can kind of chat about what we want to do? And it just gives you back a bit of a sense of power in a dynamic where you can sometimes feel very vulnerable. So kind of the more at home we feel, the easier decisions tend to be to make. So anything, yeah, that's going to kind of ground you, put you back in the driver's seat of the decisions is very, very important.
That's so helpful. I think, yeah, sleeping on it is so important. So I think advocating for yourself, you know, doing what feels right for you, using the brain, the brain acronym can be really, really helpful for sure.
I think it's really easy to assume that everything that you're being suggested is based on really high quality evidence. Like, because we're, you know, it's in the guidelines, it says that you should be offered this test, so of course you're going to do it.
Yeah.
But when you dig a little bit deeper, something like only 30% of guidelines in obstetrics are actually based on what we would describe as high quality evidence, and the majority of them aren't. And so you can even ask that question. You can ask, like, how reliable is this as a recommendation? Is this based on high quality? If you're really interested, you can go away and do the research yourself. But sometimes that then just puts people off further. But just digging a little bit deeper and being like, you know, is there really good evidence to say that this is going to help me, or is it a little bit iffy? A lot of the time you'll be told, well, there isn't really any evidence. Yeah. It's just a recommendation. And then you go, okay, so now I feel much more comfortable making, or they might be like, there is very clear evidence. It shows that for 99% of people, this is going to improve outcomes. And when you have that information, so gestational diabetes is a really good example, because the evidence around the testing for it, the management of it, the treatment of it is basically quite shit.
Yeah.
And it's often jumbled up with women who have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, which again is completely different. So it's, yeah, digging a little bit deeper before just kind of blindly agreeing to things is really helpful.
Absolutely. I used to work for the NHS as a nutritionist doing for diabetes and diabetes care.
Okay.
So I just knew that it just wasn't, I didn't need to do the test, you know. But yeah, that's such helpful advice. Absolutely, advocating for yourself, asking questions, asking for the evidence, brilliant advice. So our community are often asking questions around hypnobirthing and whether it's suitable for all types of birth, because often there's a perception that it's just for home births. And for me, having two home births, it was so integral to how my births went, and I found it so helpful. But can you explain a little bit more about how hypnobirthing works for other types of births and whether it can be used for cesarean and induction births as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been teaching hypnobirthing for the past 7 years, and I'm actually in the process of moving away from the name of it, not so much the practice of it. All of the mindset techniques and the information providing are still very much part of what is now the birth ed method. But having taught hypnobirthing for so long, I think that the main thing to get across is that, unfortunately, hypnobirthing is not a regulated practice and it is not a protected term. So people can basically call anything hypnobirthing. And hypnobirthing, when it is provided in a nuanced and balanced way, can absolutely be hugely helpful for every kind of birth, whether that's with an epidural, an induction, a home birth, a cesarean birth. It is there to impact the way that your brain is working, your subconscious thoughts and ideas about birth, to help eliminate any irrational or unfounded fears about birth, so that when you are making choices for your birth, when you're experiencing labor or birth, you are able to make those decisions from a point of instinct, from a point of kind of truth, from a point of fact, rather than being kind of influenced by something you've seen on TV or a story that you've heard that you didn't have any context for. And so tools to help anybody relax, to help anybody feel calm, are going to be vitally important, literally, regardless of how you're giving birth. We talk about the creation of oxytocin, which is a really important hormone in labor. It's one of the main hormones that is involved in the entire labor process. But it goes beyond just causing surges or contractions in labor. It is responsible for bonding with your baby, initiating breastfeeding if you want to breastfeed, feelings of calm in your body. And so those are things that, in my opinion, you would want transferred to every kind of birth experience. And the benefits of those kinds of hormones go far beyond simply the kind of process of labor itself. Somewhere that we do have to be really careful of, and this is sort of what has led me to kind of separate birth ed from the kind of umbrella term of hypnobirthing itself, is that when hypnobirthing is taught in a way that isn't nuanced, it can sometimes present the kind of home water birth on a bit of a pedestal. And if you don't get that, then you did it wrong. Yeah. And it can, similarly to what we just talked about with this cascade of interventions leaving women feeling like their body failing, if we don't have that balance and that nuance in the conversations around hypnobirthing and those tools, then it similarly can lead women to feel like, oh, I just did hypnobirthing wrong. I just didn't breathe well enough. I just didn't practice hard enough. You know, I've seen genuine hypnobirthing teachers, when women have expressed experiences of birth trauma, asking them like, did they practice enough? And you're like, that's just not, you're just missing like a huge part of what conforms somebody's birth story there. And so you do need to make sure that when you're choosing a birth preparation course of any kind, that you really feel that you're aligned with the company and the course that are kind of providing that education, and reading like stories from people that have used that approach, and really challenging yourself to read like a breadth of stories can be a really helpful way of knowing what kind of preparation it's going to give you. And you know, some hypnobirthing courses will be much more holistic or spiritual than the way that I teach it, and that might be more aligned for somebody. So it's not, and equally some hypnobirthing courses are more like almost like an obstetric led antenatal course with a few breathing techniques thrown on the top for a hypnobirthing session, which is an hour long. So it's there isn't like a standard practice of it, but as a concept in general, the way that we are influencing the mind, understanding the body, and taking back control of our choices, that, yes, definitely.
So if you could please share with our listeners where they can find you, all about your courses, your Instagram, and everything that you want our listeners to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram at birth_ed. Just a slight heads up is that it's got quite graphic photos on it of people giving birth. So if you're on a train listening to this, just be careful if someone's leaning over your shoulder and you don't want them to see. You can find our courses at www.birth-ed.co.uk. And we have a podcast, the Birth Ed Podcast, which you will find wherever you're listening to this.
Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much, Megan. It was so nice to connect, and I can't wait for all our listeners to hear this episode.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us to reach other mums just like you.